This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida. Oh, wow. At the bottom of the hour, I have a very special guest. His name is Vikrant. It's a wonderful name, and it means, well, it's a name that means courageous, and he's a courageous guy. He started a business, and he is a great success, and it's going to be fun to listen to him. But right now, I'm turning to our legal eagle, because I have received some wonderful questions from you listeners about all the things you want to know about intellectual property. So I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson. Hi, Bill.
Good morning.
Good morning. Oh, wow. You know, as you know, during this pandemic-y time, people are so they've had some excess time on their hands.
Yes, everybody's on pins and needles.
Exactly. And, of course, many people are starting to write, and then many people, when they couldn't write, they were going on to various social medias, and sometimes they got themselves in trouble. And at some point, we're going to talk about some of that. But right now, I want to talk about something that really, and many of the listeners contacted me about this one. I don't know if they have something, a reason to worry. But there was a big article about Philip Roth, who, of course, wrote Portnoy's Complaint and Goodbye Columbus and so many wonderful books, a great author, and a biography was written about him. And the author of the biography, Blake Bailey, got himself in a lot of trouble. So do you want to explain what happened exactly here?
So in this case, it appears that the publisher canceled the contract based on allegations of inappropriate behavior by the author. And this is becoming more and more prevalent in contracts, these so-called moral clauses, where publishers or other companies that hire talent, for instance, sports players or musical folks, if they are cast in a bad light, whether it's true or not, they can be contractually cut. And so that poses a real problem, because in many cases it could be true, and in many cases it could be false.
Well, in this case, of course, the book about Philip Roth is, I mean, this is a big, important author, Pulitzer Prize winning author, you know, beloved American author. So many people have read his books. But now he is tainted forevermore. His name is tainted now by the person who wrote the book about him.
Yeah, the mere allegations. So for attorneys, this is troubling, because we believe in due process. And what that means in the law, due process, is that every person has a right to challenge their accuser and have their fair shake, to ask questions and present their own evidence to determine whether or not the allegation is true or false. Unfortunately, in the very tough climate that we have right now, the due process has kind of gone away, and the mere allegation is enough to have somebody have their contract canceled. It's unfortunate. But on the other side of it, what a lot of folks will say is, with respect to these particular types of allegations, that they have for so long been buried and ignored that the time has come now to these kind of allegations be brought forward, and the mere fact that the allegations are brought pretty much ends the career of many people.
Well, the publisher, W.W. Norton & Company, this was a unilateral decision. They decided to pull all editions of the Philip Roth, the biography, and to permanently remove them. And in fact, of course, Blake Bailey was accused of some terrible conduct, and he didn't have an opportunity to, have his input. It was just done. Now, what happens at that point? You know, does the Philip Roth estate, they must be feeling pretty terrible at this point.
Yeah, they're in a tough spot because they basically have to unprove the allegations. And the way that our system of laws works under the Due Process Clause is that the accuser has to prove the allegations. So it makes it very tough when you have to unprove an allegation. And once the damage is done, even if proven untrue later, that may not be enough to fix the problem.
Well, it must be, I can imagine the estate is completely flummoxed by the entire thing, because there they thought they had a biography about Philip Roth, who, by the way, I was trying to get on the program back in 2016. In my second year of Joy on Paper, I tried to get him on, but he was already too sick. He couldn't make an appearance. So, I mean, I would have loved to talk to him about his books. Now, do you think his estate can sue the publisher or not?
It depends what the contract says. If the contract has one of those morality clauses, then it's probably enforceable, and they were entitled to take the action.
So the publisher had the right to enforce the clause.
If there is a morality clause in the contract, then they would probably be entitled to enforce that by withdrawing the book.
But can the estate sue the publisher because they didn't do due diligence to find out this information before they hired or before they purchased this book?
Well, the way a lot of these contracts are written is that the morality clause does not require that the allegation be proved. It merely requires that the allegation be made. And that's enough for contractual termination.
Wow.
So they may not have an action against the publisher. The action would probably be against the accuser to the extent that the estate believes that the allegations are false.
Now, of course, the person who wrote the book, the author of the biography, received, I'm sure, some royalties. What's the pull back on that? When an author receives an advance, what does that mean? Is that theirs for sure, or do they have to pay that back in certainly in a case like this?
Right, and it depends what the contract says. There's non-refundable advances, and then there's refundable advances. So it depends what your contract says, and it can go either way.
So when you're doing a contract for an author, I hope you're trying to get them a non-refundable one, right?
Exactly.
Because I would assume that I'm not sure. I never got a book deal where they gave me an advance, which I would love to get. But if I got an advance, say I got $50,000, I probably would spend that $50,000 so fast they wouldn't know what happened to it. But if you don't have that in the contract, you are liable for it.
Yeah, so if the contract provides that the advance is refundable, if the contract is canceled on the morality clause, then you have to give that money back, and if you don't, then the publisher would sue to try to get their money back.
So all of the people out there, and I know some people who have worked with and gotten smaller advances, and sometimes from smaller publishers, not the big five, but they've gotten advances, and I know that they spent that money immediately.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if they, so often, and this is the danger, and I'm telling this to all the authors all the time, that you do not want to sign a contract that a publisher provides you without first running it through your lawyer, because the publisher's lawyer is going to do what is good for the publisher. The publisher is not looking out for the author, correct?
Correct. The lawyer is looking out for his client and writing it in a light most favorable to their client. And that's why you need a lawyer on each side, so you can negotiate those terms.
it's not that the publisher is trying to pull a fast one on an author.
No, they're just trying to get the best deal they can, like anybody would.
Yeah. So the with a new authors, people who are just starting off, it is their natural instinct. I think it's your, there's something about, you know, when you say like, oh, one of the big five, you're in such awe of them that you almost don't want to question them. Like, that might ruin the deal.
Right, exactly. You have very little negotiating power.
But something like that, if there is a clause in there that says you have to pay back, it's a refundable advance, either you have to know that, really be clear on it, so that if you get that $50,000 advance, you put it in the bank and you don't spend it until you're sure that they can't come back at you.
And it could be years and years later.
So,
a lot of these contracts are not negotiable. If you're a young writer and this is your first opportunity, most of the publishers like to stick to the language of their agreements, and it's almost a take it or leave it situation, unfortunately. It's not until you really become popular and have a following that you have more negotiating power.
It's always that way. Yeah, the more you have, you know, behind you, the more that you can get out of people, which always reminds me of the wonderful lawyer that Lee Child must have had when he did his contract for the Jack Reacher books. Because, you know, he was able to claw back the rights that he sold to Tom Cruise, which is unusual. And now, of course, it's going to be a streaming video, which is going to be worth millions and, you know, millions and millions, probably more than all the books combined. But that obviously was one smart lawyer.
Yeah. So, I don't know exactly what went on in that case, how they handled that. That may just be one of those cases where they got lucky, or it could have been skillful lawyering. It's hard to tell. But in most cases, the publishers really have the power because they have the ability to get the book out there. They have the contacts, and the author really doesn't have any negotiating power to tell the publisher, well, I want all this changed in my favor. A lot of publishers would just say, well, then go somewhere else.
Well, you know, of course, that contract was 20 years ago. And the interesting thing is, luckily, Lee Child had been in television production, so he understood television production. Certainly, I'm sure even, you know, 20 years ago, he had no idea that one day there would be streaming video that would, you know, take over the universe. But something, there had to be a clause in there because it's not easy. Generally speaking, when you sell your book rights to a film company, you lose all rights.
Yes, including all the rights for derivative works that might come out in different media.
Exactly. So that was a very unusual contract, and I'm not sure if it was a combination of a smart, because most writers, you know, don't have any background like he did. He was in production, so he understood production, and I'm sure he had a good lawyer. But it's this kind of thing that you need, really, because that's one of the things that you do. I mean, you look at what's happening today, but also plan for things that might be in the future, because we still don't know. I mean, people might be doing 3D movies, you know, but really 3D, not just movies, but things that show up in your living room. And you have to, you plan as an intellectual property lawyer with all of the things that, you know, and the information that's sort of at your fingertips through...
Yeah, we have language that we use now to cover any kind of possible new discoveries or uses by new discoveries. So that's the kind of language we stick in there to say that even if this is used in a media that's unknown at this time, that the author would retain those rights.
Well, in one sci-fi book I read, and, you know, the thing is, these sci-fi books, sometimes they turn out to be real, you know? When you look back at Star Trek, all the things that turned out to be real. But it's essentially, it's a 3D action in your room, and the characters are walking around your room. So, you know, this could happen. You know, things, stranger things have happened. But only an intellectual property lawyer understands all of this. And that's why I tell people they must not use their family lawyer, their real estate lawyer, their, the ones who does their will. You need to have an intellectual property lawyer. And what is the organization you belong to?
The American Intellectual Property Law Association, which is an association of lawyers from around the world who all specialize in various areas of intellectual property, so patents or copyrights or trademarks, agency, licensing, lawsuits and stuff. So you can find them. There's a lot of lawyers out there that practice agency, that practice publishing contracts, that practice copyrights. There's plenty of folks out there that can help you. So if you can, try to run one of those down before you...
Oh, yeah. Not try. You definitely do. I'm telling you from my experience...
And it may be that you don't change the contract, but at least you'll understand.
Exactly. You have to understand what you're getting into, like whether or not your advance is something that you might have to pay back one day. Because this new clause about, it's... I don't think many people understood that there could be a clause here that, they didn't understand this, that, a morality clause in a book deal.
Yeah, there could be magic words in a contract that has specific legal meanings, and the average person reading over them would not recognize those words as having a specific legal meaning, and they may just gloss over that, not realizing that those words are giving up rights.
I mean, for example,
those words on purpose. I mean, we use specific legal words to have specific legal meanings so that we're all on the same page as far as the law is concerned. But for those who, are not experts in, that particular area of law, they need to have a lawyer explain to them exactly what those words mean.
For example, like if a writer is writing a series, a happy family series, like, a Leave It to Beaver kind of family series, and becomes famous for this series. If there's a morality clause in there and they've had an affair and somebody comes along and says it, the publisher could overnight just cancel the contract.
Yes.
Yes. Well, that's sort of scary.
It is.
It's very scary because, as you said...
Very scary because if the allegations are false,
yeah,
you can be ruined. And this has happened to a lot of people. False allegations later shown to be false. But they always say that, the allegation is in large print on the front page of the paper and the retraction is on the back page in very small print.
Well, I had one indie author in here whose ex-boyfriend... pulled that kind of a thing, accused her of things, and then had his friends write reviews on Amazon along the same lines. And I mean, she was devastated, just devastated. And you can't get anything back off of Amazon. Those reviews are there forever. So
right.
it's really scary out there.
Mm-hmm. So it's a really tough question to answer.
But people
who have been wronged, and have an entitlement to voice their allegations, and then at the same time the rights of the accused to prove their innocence.
Wow! It is one of these paths that's got a lot of rocks in it. But before I let you go, I want to talk a little bit about this. Somebody sent me a question about the PRO Act. What is the PRO Act, and what does it do in terms of dealing with freelance writers and authors?
It has to do with a law trying to be pushed through the House that expands the rights for people to collectively bargain, union. So, for example, here in Florida, we are what's considered a right-to-work state, a non-union state. This act would override that Florida law, and Florida would no longer be a right-to-work state. It's very complicated. It actually deals mostly with employees, but it also appears to have some issues concerning the difference between an employee and an independent contractor. And so if for example, if a guy comes to fix your air conditioner at your house and he shows up in his own truck and he fixes your AC and he leaves and you pay him, that's clearly an independent contractor. And on the other hand, my secretary here who works every day in my office is clearly an employee. But sometimes you have this gray area where people float in between those two things, and it's a real question of whether they are employees or independent contractors. I counsel my clients that when in doubt, call them an employee. Because if it comes back later and reverses you call them an independent contractor and then they're later determined to be an employee, it's a real mess.
And how would it affect writers? I wasn't sure where...
I don't think it should, for the most part. I don't think it should affect writers. I think writers are clearly independent contractors, and the contracts that you see for writers, unless you're working for a big business, let's say you're a Disney cartoonist, okay? You're probably an employee. You work inside their establishment. You use their tools. You're there every day. But for those who write at home and use their own computer or pencils, those are more likely independents, not employees.
And they don't have to worry about it. But
and it's not going to become law. It's never going to make it out of the Senate. It's never going to make it on the floor of the Senate.
Ah, okay.
It's DOA. Yeah, it's DOA.
It's DOA. Okay.
It was DOA.
So how are you doing? My people, you know, they send me a message. How's Bill Larson doing in all of this thing? Are lawsuits going back up? Are you going back to court yet? What's happening with you?
So we've been very busy, largely because we do a lot of work in the medical industry for patenting and trademarks, and a lot of our big medical companies we represent make the products that we need to solve the pandemic.
Ah, okay.
Respiratory products and all kinds of stuff. So medical's been way up, and that's kept us going. At the same time, a lot of people lost their jobs, and it appears that instead of going back to work, they want to be entrepreneurs. So we are actually running at 110% capacity. We're so busy, we're almost at the point we can't accept clients anymore because we have so much going on. And the pandemic turned out for us to make us very busy. There were some challenges in getting my staff to work from home, and we're still working through that, but we kind of figured it out, and it looks like in the future, I don't think we're ever going to go back to the traditional ways of working. I don't see everybody just coming in at 8 and leaving 5 ever happening again. I think it's going to be more like a rolling employment where people come and go.
I agree. People they've learned a new lifestyle. But, I'm glad you're busy. I know that there are a lot of patents out there. As you know, I have some patents with you, and you're just a great patent lawyer firm and patent law experts. And so anybody out there who's, you've had some time during these, people are, you know, isn't it funny how when you have a lot of time, you start thinking of how can I fix this? And it's just so much fun to see what new inventions people will come out with, right?
Yeah, and that's probably the most interesting part of the job is that every day people come in and show me things, and I just shake my head. That's just so brilliant. They fix problems. Most of they solve problems. There's two kinds of patents, really. You get your consumer products, you know, your hairbrushes and your stuff you sell in the retail stores, and then you have your industrial products, you know, like parts that go in engines and stuff like that, and your medical products.
Well, it's...
So it's very interesting.
Well...
People invent.
Bill, thank you again so much for being on Joy on Paper today. Everybody, it's Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, and the best way to contact you, Bill?
Is through our webpage at larsonpatentlaw.com, and we have a page there. You can send me an email. And I will respond.
And Bill is always happy to help people if you have questions about your copyrights, how to do a copyright. Bill will walk
you
through
it yourself.
Yeah. So okay, Bill, thank you so much again for being on Joy on Paper. Take care. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to have a commercials, and then we'll have the book buzz after the commercials. Okay, Ed.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest. Oh, and he's not on yet. He's going to be on in a few minutes, I hope. Okay. Just waiting for him to call in, and this is going to be... I'm going to do the book buzz. Let's do the book buzz. Why not?
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on book buzz. Fans of Michael Connelly, you know him for his detective novels featuring LAPD detective Harry Bosch and criminal defense attorney Mickey Haler. Stay tuned, Connelly fans. For the first time in 10 years, he will introduce the world to a new protagonist. Her name is Renee Ballard. The Renee Ballard series kicks off with The Late Show on July 18th. Here's the buzz. She's a young detective for the LAPD who has been stuck on the night shift. Given the nature of the job, she can never finish a case, and she must hand each project to the day shift detectives when the night shift ends. But everything changes when she finds two cases that she refuses to part with. Working these two cases in secret during the day, she not only risks her job, these cases will force her to face her own demons as well. Can't wait for the Renee Ballard series to start with The Late Show. It should be out on July 18th. Hey, like you, are you waiting for Bosch? No worries. The next installment in the Bosch series, Two Kinds of Truth, will be out later this year on October 31st. Connelly fans, finally, we have all episodes of Bosch Seasons 1, 2, and 3 streaming right now on Amazon Prime Video. Binge watch it like me. It was so much fun. So catch The Late Show with the new Renee Ballard series on July 18th. Two Kinds of Truth, back with Harry Bosch on October 31st. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on mysteries you should not miss, click on Book Buzz with Rita Moreau. Buzzing off for now.
Okay, Rita Moreau. Wow. Okay, I don't know. I am waiting for my guest, and this is supposed to be a surprise because it was really, I'm waiting, you know. This always happens sometimes, you know. This is live radio, so I'm going to just have to chat until he calls. I think he's in California, actually. So perhaps there's a problem. You know, we've had that a couple of times, right? Ed, we've had that a couple of times where the authors are asleep instead of waking up, and they get the time wrong. So I'm just hoping that he's going to call in, and if he does, he's going to have a nice interview because I've been waiting to talk to him. But if not, then I have a couple other things I want to talk about. And one of them, of course, you know, it's the entire idea behind the program is that I will help authors and in some cases help songwriters with promoting their books. And so it was a really wonderful, wonderful sort of combination. When I talked to Lang Martin Jr., of course, he's been on the program many times. And then Haley Woolbright was on the program. And I invited her because I just fell in love with her song, Boxcar. And when I heard it, I said, "Whoa! I want to help this girl. I want to help her promote." You know, I haven't done a lot of songwriters, a few, and I love music, and I just love this song. So I wanted to play this song. And then after I played it the first time, I said to myself, "Well, Lang Martin Jr. should hear this, and they should get together." And it was so funny that. After a while, a few months later, I got Lang on the phone and I got her on the phone and they had an interview together. And then just last month, they got together in Nashville. And this was so rewarding for me because it was something. Haley has a wonderful career ahead of her. And Lang Martin Jr. has helped so many songwriters over the years. So I thought, well, this is something. A real accomplishment. I feel very proud that I brought the two of them together. I think they're going to have a nice relationship, get to know each other, and just inspire each other also, because that's what songwriters do once they get together. So we're going to play Boxcar, and hopefully my guest is going to call in, and if not, I have some other information to tell you.
Stowed away on this boxcar for quite some time. We plan to ride it all the way from Maine to Anaheim. But things change and people do too. My company's gone. I could choose to step off and make my way back home, or I could choose to keep moving on. My time is come and gone. Maybe I'll stay my welcome, but I've outgrown this boxcar and I'm headed down the I've been traveling along for the ride. Colored the Smokies, braved the Rockies, and rolled the hills of the countryside. But things change and people do too. This freight train has run its course. I'm still gonna make it out west, so I'll hop on a new line with no
Well, that's, you know, I love this song. It has, it just perks me up every morning. I play it. It's one of the 10 songs that I play in the morning on my playlist. And the funny thing is, of course, she wrote it about a guy she was in love with, and he left her. And so she was devastated, and she writes this song, which actually, you know, she got over him. And she got married, so she's newlywed, and it was you know, of course, she had to have her wedding during the pandemic-y time. She had planned on a big, big wedding, and then ended up having a wedding, you know, in her backyard. But she's now happily married, and it's just fun. It's fun to know that I've been able to help her along, and just because this is what I want to do. I want to help all of you. I've tried to connect you to, sometimes I try to connect you to other authors who can help you, and I'm trying desperately to connect you to agents, and I'm doing some work also trying to connect you to people in Hollywood. I don't have as many connections as I used to have in Hollywood, but I'm trying to build them back up because many times I get a book that I just want. I want to see it in a film. And I was recently on Hollywood Connections, which is a program here on 10 Talk Radio Network with Don Reese. And I was able to talk about some of the books that I think should be films, because heavens knows we need new product out there. So much of the product, I mean, you've seen it over and over. We need new product, and I hope they'll start shooting. Philip Vega's book, The Last Exit to Montauk is, I can see that. I could film it tomorrow. If I had the money, if I won the lottery, I would option that, and I would hire a production company, and I would start filming that book, because I think it would make a great film. And then, of course, there are other authors like Carol J. Perry, who has a new book coming out May 25th, See Something. And it is another one of her books in this wonderful Witch City Mystery series that she's created. She's on, this is her 11th book. And at that point, when you've had 11 books, you've written 11 really great books along the way, you've developed the characters, you've developed everything. It's set in Salem. Now, can you imagine the wonderful locations that could be shot if you were doing this series? So this is one of the things I'm trying to get people to cooperate with me too, because if you go onto my Facebook page and you mention or follow one of the books that I've recommended, just let's try to get the word out there, because part of this whole system, and having been out in Hollywood, I know one thing that you have to do. You have to get your name out in front of people. And the only way to do that is to get people to talk and to read your book. And it's not easy. I don't want to say this to you people. Some of you people will say, okay, I will tell you this, and this is true. When I was there, night did not. It's very hard to get a book in the hands of somebody who will really read the book. So this is a process. But if you can, and there are ways to do it, and if we can reach more of the people who are the decision makers, so that some of the books that have been on my program, these books absolutely should be films. And it's a process. So you have to help me go to my Facebook page. I need more followers. I need more likes. When I put up a book there, if I like it and I tell you that I think it's great, if you can, you know, do all of that stuff, it's hard. I know for you authors, it's hard, you know, to do all the Facebook things. It's hard for me to do all the Facebook things, but this is something we have to do, and we have to get the word out there. And I really should be able to influence more people so that we get the authors who deserve to get noticed will get noticed. Jill Block is one of the authors whose book, I mean, I just fell in love with. It's called The Truth About Parallel Lines. It's another book where I could immediately option it if I had the money. So people, cross your fingers that I will win the lottery, because I can tell you, there are at least 8 books that I would option tomorrow. I would just give the authors money and say, I want to organize something for you. So, you know, this is part of the fun of doing this program, that I've had this opportunity to help so many authors and to meet so many authors and to read your books and to help promote your work. One of course, some of the authors I get, they're already, you know, global best-selling authors. I've had, of course, David Baldacci and Lee Child and his brother, who is now Andrew Child, which I just cannot get used to saying that, because to me, his name is always Drew. But one of the authors that I love, and he's been on the program a number of times, is Jeffrey Deaver. And I was so thrilled that I heard, and again, I just read that he got a 2-contract deal for 2 more books coming out in 2022. And one of them is his character, Coulter Shaw, which I love. And the other one is Lincoln Rhyme. Lincoln Rhyme is the one, if you've in the book, in this book Bone Collector, and of course you've all seen the film. I love that character. Lincoln Rhyme is one of my favorite characters, and Jeffrey Deaver will be back on here to talk about those books when they come out. But it's wonderful that he has this deal. And how do I know that he has this deal? Because I read Publishers Weekly, and if you are looking for an agent, then you should be reading Publishers Weekly. And just check it out. They have one section there called Book Deals, and you can find out what's happening with whoever is happening. And I'm just going to tell Big Ed in the control room, Big Ed, pull out Book Buzz number, I think it's 45. I hope it's number 45. Anyway, pull out Book Buzz 45. We're going to play that because my throat is going a little bit, because we have this Eau de Clorox floating around the room. But we'll play the next Book Buzz as soon as Ed pulls it up. I'm keeping him busy today, pulling up all of these, because I don't know what happened to this guest, and I won't even name him. It's good I didn't name him. Usually I will say at the bottom of the hour, so-and-so. Well, I was going to say at the bottom of the hour, but I wanted it to be a surprise, because he's really... he's pretty amazing, but now he's not on. He didn't call. I don't know. He could be sound asleep there in California. And do we have a Book Buzz ready? Let's play a Book Buzz so I can have a drink of water, and then I'll be right back.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest Book Buzz. Just in time for Patsy's anniversary of Joy on Paper comes a novel by her favorite mystery writer, Tasha Alexander. During the past year, many of Patsy's listeners have been taking a grand tour through Europe with Tasha's mysteries that have taken readers from London to Paris to Vienna, all around the continent. The next stop on this magnificent tour is Florence, where Patsy went on her honeymoon. So make yourself a cup of tea and grab a scone, that's a British pronunciation, and enjoy Lady Emily's next adventure, The Dark Heart of Florence, by critically acclaimed author Tasha Alexander. Tasha transports us to the legendary city of Florence, where Lady Emily must solve a murder with clues leading back to the times of the Medici. In 1903, growing tensions between Britain and Germany loom over Europe. It is something that has not gone unnoticed by Lady Emily and her husband, Colin Hargreaves, who is an agent of the Crown. He is on a mission, but first he is drawn to Italy, where a series of burglaries at his daughter's palazzo in Florence might have international implications. He and Emily travel to Tuscany, where soon after their arrival, a stranger is thrown to his death from the roof onto the marble palazzo floor. When Colin is told that his mission must remain top secret, even from his wife, it doesn't sit well with Emily. So she secretly launches her own clandestine inquiry into the murder, aided by her spirited and witty friend, Cecile. They soon discover that the palazzo may contain a hidden treasure dating back to the days of the Medici and the violent reign of a fanatic monk. Days that resonate in the troubled early 20th century, an uneasy time full of intrigue, duplicity, and warring ideologies. Emily and Cecile race to untangle the cryptic clues leading them through the Renaissance city, but an unimagined danger follows closely behind. And when another violent death puts Emily directly in the path of a killer, there's much more than treasure at stake. Continue your grand tour with Tasha Alexander's The Dark Heart of Florence, available wherever books are sold. This is Rita Moreau, reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to this webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's Radio-Joy on Paper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Well, thank you, Rita Moreau. And Rita Moreau has her own book that just came out. It's called Wheeler Dealer. And it is part of her new kooky mystery series. And she is kooky a little bit. And it's a fun series that she's just started. It's about someone who's traveling around in an RV. A woman who has a guest with her. An unexpected guest, and I think you will enjoy it very much. And Rita's been really busy during this pandemic-y time. She started the series, she wrote the first book in lickety-split time, the second book, she did that, and now she's on her third book, and we're going to be following her main character, Mabel, across the country from Boca Vista, Florida, all the way across the country. There are going to be a lot of adventures during this series, and she's hoping that at some point she's going to be up catching up with her friend Carol J. Perry and have 11, 12, 34. You know, that's the wonderful thing about being an author. You can keep writing. You can keep writing for years and years. So you might start, for example, Eugenia Lovett West started writing when she was around in her 60s, about 68, I think. And in February, she celebrated her 97th birthday here on Joy on Paper. Whoa, look at that. She's writing. She's writing like crazy. And she's 97 years old. And the other day I had Ed Hajim on the program, and he's 85 years old. And he just came out with a great book, On the Road Less Traveled, a wonderful book, very inspirational and also very educational, because you know, we all have to know a little bit more about the stock market and Wall Street in general and where money is going. And Ed Hajim wrote this book. It's really the story of his life, because it's from the time he was put in an orphanage at one point in his life to the time now that he is, a great big success and philanthropist. So a wonderful book, but he's 85 years old. This is what I'm telling you. That's the great thing about being an author, is that you don't have a retirement age. You're not, at 62, your life's not over. Your life just continues to get better and better. Because as I said, Eugenia Lovett West wrote at the age of 96 a book about cybercrime. Now, she didn't know anything about cybercrime when she started it. She did a year of research, and I'm telling you, she's accurate. She's great, because I've been involved with people who knew details about cybercrime, and they all say her book is great. So this is the wonderful thing about writing. You pick a subject, something that you want to write about. Maybe it's yourself, maybe it's your family, or maybe it's a subject that you don't really know anything about until you start doing the research, like cybercrime. And that's, maybe artificial intelligence, maybe I don't know what. This is what is wonderful about being a writer. You can do it. You can just start and, takes some people a long time to get that first book out. But generally speaking, once you get that first book out, then you can't stop. It's always the first book. Sometimes it'll take 10 years to get that first book done. Like I had Kara Ruda on the other day. And it took her about 10 years before she got her first book published. And then next thing she knows, she's, a best-selling author. And her book that I reviewed the other day is it's going to be another best-selling book. So it's all in how you look at life. If you are going to try, if you're going to work hard, try something new, not be stuck in a rut. Not just retire and sit around doing nothing and letting all your brain cells, all those little gray cells that are in your brain there, wither away. What you want is you want to keep them active, keep all those electrons popping around as you learn more, as you study, as you you get into, if you're a writer, as you get into marketing, as you get into publicity, all of the things that you have to do in order to be a writer nowadays, boy, that can keep you busy. And as I said, it can keep you busy if you do Facebook. I really want to build up this Facebook following. So if you would go to Radio Joy on Paper on Facebook, like me, like the, do all of that thing where you forward all of my posts, because I'm trying to do more of them and make them more interesting, because I want to promote authors. I want to help really spread the word that we have some really, really great authors out there whose books deserve recognition. And I just need your help to do it. So go to my Facebook page, Radio Joy on Paper. Like me, like my authors, like everybody that I write about, and we'll spread the word. That's what we have to do in this business. Anyway, I'm just going to say this, as I always say it. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. And check out NaNoWriMo, because they have an event coming up in June to help you also do some writing here in the summer. So you don't have to wait until November. You can start writing now and just have fun. Fill your life with joy. That's what you have to do. Make sure you say something nice to somebody today. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Ed, thank you so much. Oh, he managed to pull up all those book buzzes and everything. Everybody, and thank Rita Moreau so much for her book buzzes. Everybody, bye-bye now.